Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for April 16th, 2013. I'm Annalisa VanHook, and today I'll be speaking with Guanglei Zhuang and Napoleon Ferrara about the temporal dynamics of signaling downstream of VEGF. VEGFs, or vascular endothelial growth factors, are a family of related secreted growth factors that promote angiogenesis. VEGFs act on endothelial cells to promote the growth of blood vessels during normal development and during wound healing, and they also stimulate the growth of blood vessels into tissues that have been deprived of oxygen because of blocked or damaged blood vessels. VEGF-mediated vascularization of tumors is required for the tumors to grow beyond a certain size, and so VEGFs are implicated in cancer progression. VEGF also plays a role in pathologies that are characterized by abnormal blood vessel growth, like diabetic retinopathy and age-related macular degeneration. Antibodies that bind to VEGF to inhibit it and drugs that block the activity of proteins downstream of VEGF are used clinically to block VEGF activity and inhibit blood vessel growth. And so understanding the intricacies of VEGF signaling is important for devising new ways to intervene when VEGF signaling goes awry. In a study published in the current issue of Science Signaling, Guanglei Zhuang and Napoleon Ferrara report on their investigation of the temporal dynamics of signaling events initiated by VEGF. Zhuang spoke to me from Genentech in South San Francisco and Ferrara from the University of California, San Diego. Welcome, Dr. Ferrara, Dr. Zhuang.
Thank you, Annalisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
VEGF signaling has been pretty extensively studied, and we know the identity of many of the proteins that are involved in VEGF signaling. But in this study, you focused not so much on the identity of the downstream signaling components, but rather on the temporal dynamics of protein phosphorylation events that are triggered by VEGFs. Why is understanding the dynamics of signaling as important as understanding the components of signaling?
I think understanding the dynamic and systematic changes of signaling transduction and reprogramming is increasingly important for VEGF biology and drug discovery. This allows the extension of signaling components into signaling cascades and networks. And this information provides a missing link in a global integrative view of VEGF pathway. For example, now we could interrogate the temporal sequence of cellular response to VEGF activation. It appears that VEGF first stimulates cytoskeleton proteins and GTPases to regulate endothelial cell adhesion and motility. This is followed by phosphorylation of transcriptional factors to affect gene expression. At later stage, molecules involved in protein binding are engaged to establish an integrated network.
I completely agree with Lei. I think this provides a much more, comprehensive kind of snapshot of what happened in endothelial cells upon stimulation with the VEGF. It actually led to identification of the thousands of phosphopeptides, over 5,000. And of course, not all of this is going to be physiologically important or physiologically relevant, but this work opened up, the possibility and additional important components are going to be discovered. This, of course, will require much more work in the future.
There are multiple VEGFs, and there are multiple receptors that can be activated by those VEGFs. In this study, did you focus on a specific ligand receptor combination?
Yes, so there were 5 VEGF ligands and 3 VEGF receptors in this family. We specifically focused on VEGF-A ligand, which is a major regulator of vascular genesis and angiogenesis, as indicated by genetic studies. VEGF-A binds with both VEGF receptor 1 and VEGF receptor 2. However, VEGF receptor 2 activation is largely responsible for the VEGF-induced endothelial cell proliferation and migration. Therefore, we reasoned that in current system, the phosphorylation spectrum mainly reflects the VEGF-A-VEGF receptor 2 pathway. But I think in the future, it will be interesting to investigate the phosphoproteome in other ligand receptor combinations.
Yes, I think I would add that still after 2 decades, the role of this VEGF receptors, still is not completely clear. I think it's much more clear for VEGF receptor 2, which, as Lei has correctly pointed out, seems to be the main signaling, component in the system, the one which mediates most of the activity of VEGF. The role of VEGF receptor 1 still is very unclear. There is a lot of controversy. You know, it looks that in most of the system is very poor signaling molecules. It's very difficult to document receptor autophosphorylation in response to the ligand. So we thought that while this is an extremely interesting question, what happens when you stimulate the cells with the ligand selective for VEGF receptor 1, but this will leave to the future because the picture is already complex enough with the one ligand.
VEGF signaling stimulates several different intracellular signaling modules, including the PI3 kinase AKT pathway and the MAP kinase pathway. How do signals from these different pathways downstream of VEGF affect the endothelial cells? Do these modules regulate different aspects of the responses to VEGF, or are they all required together in concert?
Actually, I think both seem to be partially right, because our phosphoproteomic study also implicates AMTER, particularly AMTER complex 2 in VEGF signaling. So the PI3 kinase AMTER complex 2 pathway phosphorylates a large number of substrate proteins, and this pathway is crucial for VEGF signaling in endothelial cells. In accordance with these findings, PI3 kinase or AMTER kinase inhibitors dramatically suppressed VEGF-induced phosphorylation events and endothelial cell viability. On the other hand, in vitro, the effects of inhibiting MAP kinase pathway were rather limited in HUVEX. So certainly these different modules differentially affect the cultured endothelial cells in response to VEGF. However, at the same time, there were extensive crosstalks between these pathways. We showed one example in our study, that is the reciprocal negative feedback loop, which activates PI3 kinase pathway when AMTER complex 2 is inhibited. Therefore, different pathways also work together and control one another in endothelial cells.
I will add still, you know, what is really the precise importance of the MAP kinase versus the PI3 kinase in VEGF and mediated fat. Still, it's not totally clear. I mean, after studying VEGF for 2 decades, there is lots of things which are not totally clear. For example, one aspect we address in our paper is the role in vivo of the MAP kinase versus the PI3 kinase. For example, there are some studies which suggest that the MAP kinase is particularly important. This is all primarily based on a knock-in of a particular tyrosine in the VEGF receptor 2, which results in lethality. And while this tyrosine has been implicated in activating the MAP kinase, you know, the in vivo study did not totally support this hypothesis because the level of the phosphoMAP kinase were very similar between, you know, the wild type and the mutant. And sure enough, this tyrosine also activated other pathways. And last but not least, you know, PI3 kinase, which I believe, you know, seems to be very much in agreement with the main conclusion of our study.
To do the core of the experiments that you presented in this paper, you used human umbilical vein endothelial cells, and you stimulated those cells with VEGF, and then looked to see how the set of phosphoproteins in these cells changed over time compared to cells that hadn't been treated. So how did signaling through those different downstream modules differ temporally?
At this point, I think there is not a simple answer to this question because the variety and kinetics of phosphorylation changes upon VEGF stimulation are tremendous. In general, 6 different clusters could be identified, meaning that at least 6 temporally different categories were evident in the presence of VEGF stimulation. There were early responders such as ERK or ENOS phosphorylation and later responders like S6 phosphorylation. Right now, we are still looking into the data set to dissect how each signaling module changed temporarily.
One of the things that you would expect to identify from a temporal dynamic study of signaling is the activity of feedback loops, loops that feed back to inhibit the pathway or to activate the pathway. And in this study, you reported that you identified a feedback loop downstream of VEGF that's mediated by the PI3 kinase AKT mTOR axis. Can you tell us a little bit about that feedback loop?
Yeah, absolutely. So after we dissected the PI3 kinase AMTOR complex 2 pathway is an important signaling axis downstream of VEGF receptor 2, we started to look into how we could inhibit this pathway so that we can inhibit the VEGF receptor 2 signaling in endothelial cells. However, when we did that, we found a big difference when we inhibit PI3 kinase or inhibit mTOR complex 2. The difference is that after we inhibit mTOR complex 2 for longer time term, the PI3 kinase pathway got reactivated because of the feedback activation loop. We identified the circulating mechanisms that contributes to this feedback activation of PI3 kinase, that is downstream mTOR complex 2. FOXO1 is turned on when mTOR is inhibited. So the FOXO1 is a transcriptional factor which can activate upregulation of many receptor tyrosine kinases that turn on the PI3 kinase pathway. So based on this study, we think that inhibiting PI3 kinase pathway would be a more favorable approach to inhibit the VEGF receptor 2 signaling in endothelial cells.
And I think there is pharmacological evidence to say that. There is a study actually which is going on with some colleagues at Genentech which suggested blocking a very selective the PI3K, essentially completely reproduce in most of the system the effect of blocking of VEGF is more potent than blocking mTOR. So there is this pharmacological evidence to back up our in vitro data.
So now that you know more details about the protein phosphorylation events that occur downstream of VEGF, what can you do with all of this information?
At the first step, we functionally assayed a subset of these phosphoproteins in VEGF-induced cell viability and motility using a siRNA screen. Some of the substrates identified in our study may be novel effectors downstream of the VEGF receptors, so further investigations are warranted in developmental or pathological angiogenesis. Secondly, I think with a more thorough understanding of the signaling programs and feedback loops in endothelial cells, we can also determine the action of novel drugs on vasculature and try to identify novel efficacious combination therapies. And another potential application is to use the protein phosphorylation events downstream of VEGF as biomarkers for VEGF pathway inhibitors in the clinic. So there is an urgent need for biomarkers to optimize the usage of anti-angiogenic therapies in cancer patients. So we could explore whether certain protein phosphorylation is a good indicator of VEGF bioactivity in tumors.
Yeah, they're all very valid points. But I think the most important thing in this work should really extend our knowledge, you know, generating a number of hypotheses that, you know, probably very easy to test based on the available technology and tools, you know.
So you bring up, you know, identification of targets for potential therapeutic interventions to inhibit angiogenesis in the case of tumors where the cancers are dependent upon blood flow for growth, and in the case of aberrant angiogenesis like in diabetic retinopathy, age-related macular degeneration. Using VEGF inhibitors has been very successful for treating age-related macular degeneration, that excessive growth of blood vessels in the retina that can lead to blindness. There have been some attempts to use VEGF inhibitors to treat cancers, and it's my impression that those have been less successful.
I think you said correctly. In fact, you know, I think that the impact of VEGF inhibitors in eye disease has been really something really game-changing. It's changed the course of this disease, you know. In cancer, I think there is as many as 8 different VEGF pathway inhibitors which has been approved for therapy of cancer, including, you know, renal, colorectal, lung, brain, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. So there has been clearly a benefit in several cases with a survival advantage, you know. The magnitude of this benefit is not as great as the one seen in macular degeneration. Perhaps this is not so surprising because in cancer we have a much greater level of complexity than what you have, you know, in the macular degeneration. There is this genomic instability, you know, there is this ability to activate invasive pathways which probably you don't have, or you don't have to the same extent in a non-neoplastic condition. And so this is certainly a major difference, you know, and we certainly hope to learn more, you know, about the regulation of tumor angiogenesis, such that, you know, in the future, maybe the response of the tumors to VEGF inhibitor, to angiogenesis inhibitor, can look more similar to the response to age-related macular degeneration. Another thing that also I would like to point out is that it's something that Lei was alluding to, is the biomarkers. Until now, there has not been any predictive biomarker to assess the response to VEGF inhibitor in cancer. So I think it would be extremely important to identify the biomarker. So if you can select the patients which are more likely to respond and not treat, you know, the others, probably the magnitude of benefit might be greater.
Thanks to you both, Guang Lei and Napoleon, for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, Annalise. It's been really a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure. Yeah.
That was Guang Lei Zhuang and Napoleon Ferrara, authors of a paper that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Zhuang and colleagues, and it's titled Phosphoproteomic Analysis Implicates the mTORC2-FOXO1 Axis in VEGF Signaling and Feedback Activation of Receptor Tyrosine Kinases. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can contact us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.